Well, let's do this. If you have a Bible handy, open it up. This is a, well, reasonably easy one to find. It's real easy for me because what I do is I have separate copies of the Hebrew and English translations from Mekon Mamre. That's the general Bible I use for teaching because it gives me lots of room to write notes in the margins and so forth. And there's a separate book in my case, separate three-ring binders for each one of the five books of the Torah, plus a few of the others for the prophets and so forth that I've bothered to spend the money to print out in total. In any case, this one we just opened to the new book, which is in English Numbers, but in the Hebrew it's Bamidbar. And most everybody knows that the name of the book and the name of the Torah portion correspond when we enter a new book, and it comes from the first few unique words in the book. Let me read them in both Hebrew and English. I like it in this case. It says, V'yedabar Yahuwah al Moshe, Bamidbar, and Yahuwah spoke unto Moshe in the wilderness, Bamidbar Sinai, in the tent of meeting, on the first day of the second month, second year after they'd come out of Mitzrayim, out of Egypt, and he said the following. So right away we got the fact that they're in the wilderness, and thus the name of the book. This is probably, by the way, one of the few of the books of the Torah where the English is at least pretty reasonable, because you have to admit, when it comes to this book, there are certainly a lot of numbers. So I can see, probably more so than any of the other books of the Torah, why this one gets called the Book of Numbers. And it also, because it takes place Bamidbar, that makes sense too. And what is it that Yahuwah says? He says, take the sum. Well, actually what he says, literally, is lift up the head. Lift the head of Kol Edat, all Kol Edat of the congregation or the assembly of the children of Israel, by their families, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, every male by their polling. And these are literally going to be, if you will, I saw it put this way in one of the Midrashim, the draft age folks, 20 years and up, males that are able to go forth to war in Israel. Number them. You and Aaron, go out and do that. And there with you will be a man of every tribe, one of every head of his father's house. And then what the story does is goes through the names of all of these folks. This is one of those places where I will encourage folks to read it. And once in a while, I will go through the names and speak of the names, because certainly I think the names are important. In the Hebrew especially, the name has a whole lot to do with the character of the individual, or even the life's calling, the mission, the title. And I'll just encourage you to read through that. I'm not going to go through it in great detail. I will kind of summarize through it, because really what's going to happen here in this portion, we're going to go through it in a couple different ways and in a couple different orders too. It's the repetition, it's the ordering, and indeed it's some of the numbers that I want to focus on just a bit here. So what we see up front, let's just say, here's a quick summary of chapter 1. This is about commanding a census of the men who are able to go to war. And right there, you know something else if we've been through the Torah before, and that is that that would not include the Levites. The sons of the house of Levi are not to go to war, so they're not going to be counted in this particular census. As a matter of fact, in the portion later, we're going to get a separate counting of them. And all of this is kind of fascinating. So, let's see. Is there anything I want to say first before we get into that? We are talking first about, in the wilderness, a census. One of the things that we know from reading the Torah and seeing examples laid out, including the unfortunate case of King David, is a census is only to be done when the Creator of the universe commands it. You don't count heads unless it's by His command. Because there's something about counting that seems to imply an ownership. I think that's interesting when you look at the census of the United States, too. I guess that's enough said, but nevertheless, slaves count, slave masters count their slaves. In this case, because we are to serve Him, and it is the tribes of Israel that were brought out by a mighty hand from bondage, it is He, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, who commands that you lift up their head, do the head count. So here we go. Here are the names of the men that will stand with you. First, from the tribe of Reuben, Elizur, son of Shedeur. Then from Simeon, Shelumiel. of Judah, Nachshon, son of Amminadab, of Issachar, Nataniel, son of Zuar, of Zebulun, of the tribes of Joseph, and of Ephraim. And this is one of those places where we're going to see there's this overlap, right? Sometimes the tribe that is Joseph or his two sons will be named separately. Sometimes it's called Joseph. Sometimes it's called Ephraim. And usually, depending upon the count, and in this case we're going to count to 12, 12 tribes will be numbered, but it's not going to include the tribe of the Levites. Of Benjamin, of Dan, Ahiezer, son of Ammishaddai, of Asher, Pagiel, of Gad, Elisaph, son of Deuel, of Naphtali, Ahira, son of Enan. These, it says, were the elect. Some translations will say the princes of the congregations, of the tribes of their fathers. These were the heads of the houses, the heads of the thousands of Israel. And Moshe and Aaron took these folks, these men that are pointed out by name, and they assembled Kol Ha'edot, all of the congregation together, on that day, that first day of the second month. Now, this is 1 month after the time of the Mishkan. And some of the sages will point out, okay, that gives them a month, when we go back and look at the story, a month to mourn over the loss of the two sons of Aaron, Nadab and Abihu. They declared their pedigrees from their families by their fathers' houses. In other words, they declared of what house they were representing according to the number of names, 20 years old and upwards. So, this is not the first time we've seen this either. Moshe did as he was commanded. He numbered them. And I guess that's important, right? Like I said, if you're going to number the people of Yah, you better be sure that you're doing it on his command. The children of Reuben, Israel's firstborn, their generations, by their families. Now, as we go through this, I'm going to just read maybe one or two of these, but you'll notice that the verses repeat almost, not only word for word, but almost letter for letter. The only difference is being the names of the tribes and in some cases, the numbers that are going to be different. And the children of Reuben, Israel's firstborn, it says, their generations, by their families, by their fathers' houses, according to the number of names, by their poles, every male from 20 years old and upward, all that were able to go forth to war. That's one verse. The next one says, those that were numbered of them of the tribe of Reuben were 46,500. Now, if you want to do an interesting exercise sometime, I've got books that point this out. We're going to see these numbers, hence the name of the book. We're going to see these numbers repeated several times. They're going to be repeated in slightly different orders, and we're going to see that if you, you could put these numbers on a map and draw them out the way that in the next chapter or two along here, we're going to see how they were laid out when they encamped. And I've always looked at this with a certain fascination and thought, you know, I have a strong suspicion that there is a whole lot more in this portion and in these numbers than meets the eye, and things that we don't quite understand yet. As of yet, I guess I haven't seen it. There are some easy things. There are some things as we go through here I'll point out. May spend a bit more time on some aspects of this tomorrow, because I do think that when you see numbers in Scripture, when you see things that don't seem to have any obvious purpose, that means you better look a little harder. And even if you think you see at least one obvious purpose, it wouldn't surprise me at all that there's not a whole lot more. Maybe seven more or six more, or maybe even a lot more than that. But in any case, we start with the tribes. We've got Reuben, and then we've got Simeon. And it says, again, of the children of Simeon, their generations, by their families. Now, you notice what's missing? It doesn't say Israel's firstborn. Otherwise, this is almost a word-for-word repeat. Of the children of Simeon, their generations, by their families, by their fathers' houses, those that were numbered thereof, according to the number of names, by their poles, every male from 20 years old and upward, all that were able to go forth to war, those that were numbered of them of the tribe of Simeon, were 59,300. Now let's pause there. Now, one of the things that has always kind of fascinated me as an engineer is, well, it's a little bit of a nerdy thing called information theory and coding theory and so forth. And if you go and if you read stories about what are called ELS codes, equal letter distant spacings, they're found by taking a computer, because it's kind of tedious to do by hand. That's how come it didn't happen up until basically our lifetime. And look through the Torah and start at any given letter and start counting any arbitrary number of letters. Let's say we'll count every third letter. And then write those letters down. See if it spells something. Then try every fourth letter and every fifth letter and every sixth letter. Then start at a different place and go through it again. You can see there's lots and lots of ways to go through it. And you can do it forwards and backwards and even sideways. Ha ha. And it turns out that in these things you will find some very interesting, let's just say, not evidently by chance, encodings. People like Sir Isaac Newton were trying to look into the Torah, expecting and thinking that, especially with these numbers, there was a lot more information than met the eye literally centuries ago. Well, anyway, one of the things that makes this particular part interesting to me, and I'll just mention it, is when you see repetitions of entire what look like paragraphs, those that were numbered of them of the tribe of Zebulun were 57,400. Right. Lots of things that are similar. In other words, we're going to see patterns of letters that obviously repeat in there. And then when you get to the part where the name of the tribe is different and the number is different and the Hebrew letters there are different, well, it's an interesting way to expect that there might be some kind of cool stuff encoded in here. I guess that's all I want to say about that for now, other than there certainly does seem to be some fascinating stuff that we don't know about all of this. Okay, well, as I've mentioned, we go through the tribes, from Gad to Judah to Issachar to Zebulun and so forth to Manasseh. Now notice, we now get Manasseh numbered separately after Ephraim of the children of Joseph, namely of the children of Ephraim. There's a slight difference in that paragraph, that verse. Their generations by their families. Those were 40,500. Then it numbers separately of the children of Manasseh. Well, that's also of Joseph, but it doesn't repeat that. Their generations by their families, all those able to go to war, they were numbered to be 30,200. And then on to Benjamin. And finally, last but, well, not quite last yet in this place, we get to Dan, and then Asher, then Naphtali. Verse 44, after the conclusion of all of those, says, These are the ones that were numbered. Aaron and Moshe numbered them. The princes of Israel, 12 men, each one for his father's house. And those that were numbered of the children of Israel, all of them at this point, by the father's houses, 20 years and up, all that were able to go forth to war. Now it gives us the conclusion, the sum of the whole of the armies that would be available to go to war. 603,550. Now, that's a number that I've got written in the margin here. It's a number that shows up several places in Scripture, especially right here in this book. It's a number that kind of gives us some insight into, you know, just how big this camp would have been. Now, think about this, folks. You've got in the desert, literally out in the middle of nowhere. Can you imagine the logistics of moving this many men? Well, wait a minute. If there's this many men able to go to war, how many women are with them? Well, we don't know precisely, but it's a pretty safe bet, at least, and I'll come back to this concept, at least as many. And there's going to be a lot of children, too, under the age of 20. Those are the ones, a lot of them, that are going to actually eventually enter into the land. Basically, when sages have looked at this and done a little bit of math, it would seem that it's pretty straightforward to guess there's probably at least 2 million, and more likely 3 million or so souls out there in the desert. Can you imagine how many gallons of water a day, right, in the desert, are drunk by 3 million people? Answer. Well, it's pushing multiple millions of gallons. That's not counting what they would use for washing and for cooking all the manna and so forth. Tremendous amount of just logistics to feed that many people. I guess it's a good thing that manna comes down, because that way they don't have to carry so much. But they've also got animals. This is a pretty good-sized camp, in other words. And that helps to explain why it is that we're going to see some specifics of the logistics, how they are going to be encamped around the Mishkan, around the tabernacle of meeting, when we get to the next section. But I want to pause here. Put this number 603,550 on the chalkboard. Or at least make a mental note of it in your heads. 603,550. Now, one of the things that you note as you go through here, with one exception, and there's some speculation on this score, all of the peoples, all of the camps, the houses that are counted, everybody comes out a nice even multiple of 100. Except for one tribe where it came out to be 50. And as, again, I keep saying this because, you know, it's true. As you might suspect, over the centuries, there's been a whole lot of speculation. Is it because they rounded these numbers off to the nearest 50 or 100? Or is it because, you know, miraculously, the creator of the universe just happened to have it work out so that it always came out with that one notable exception to be a multiple of 100? The exception, by the way, is the tribe of Gad, where there were 45,650. And the sages say, well, one thing's for sure. Since that's the only tribe that's unique, you know darn well the number is 50. Because even if they were rounding up or rounding down to the nearest 100, for it to come out to be 50, it had to be 50. Otherwise, if they were rounding it up, they would have rounded it up. I tend to think that if the Creator says there were actually 603,550, that number is precisely what it was and what it was supposed to be. The next verse in the section as we go through here, though, talks about the Levites. It says, the Levites, after the tribe of their fathers, weren't numbered among them. And we know why. And if we didn't know why, Yahuwah speaks to Moshe in the next verse and says why. The tribe of Levi, you're not to number. Don't take the sum of them among the children of Israel, but they got a special calling. You're going to appoint them over the tabernacle, the Mishkan of the Testimony, and the furniture over all of the things that appertain to it. The pillars, the walls, the coverings, the things that go within, you name it, they are going to have to be responsible for it and to carry it. They will minister to it, and they will be the ones who will encamp right around the Mishkan. So if you want to picture how things start in the next section, here's the Mishkan in the middle of the camp, and around that, the various tribes of the Levites. And we're going to hear in the next set of verses here about that. But first it tells us that whenever the tabernacle gets set up and gets taken forward, it's the Levites that'll take it down. They'll pitch it. They'll set it up. Oh, and any commoner, any man who is not a Levite that draws near is to be put to death. Children of Israel pitched their own tents, every man in his own camp, with his own standard, his own banner, his flag, if you will, according to their host. But the Levites, they're to be gathered around, they pitch their tents around the tabernacle, so that there is no wrath upon the congregation of the children of Israel. It is the Levites who are to keep charge of the Mishkan. And then it ends the chapter by saying, thus the children of Israel did, according to what Moshe commanded them. And he, in turn, was commanded by Yahuwah. That is what they did. Chapter 2 says, all right, let's talk about where things are going to get set up. Children of Israel pitch by their father's houses, every man with his own standard, his flag, and they will pitch around the tent of meeting. Now, here's how it's going to work out. On the east side, towards the sunrise, you got, first, foremost, tribe of Judah, according to their hosts. Prince of them, Nashon, son of Amminadab, and his host. And again, it repeats for us the numbering. Case of Judah here, we got 74,600. Next to him. So picture, if you will, kind of like spokes of a wheel, or an X, it's a sideways X. You got Judah right next to the Levites, who are next in turn to the Mishkan. Then moving out, you got the tribe of Issachar. Netanyel, son of Zuar, is their prince. His host, 54,400 of them, pitch to the east of Judah. Now let's picture this again. You've got a Mishkan with a whole bunch of Levites around it. We don't know how many yet, but we will. Hint, hint. It's going to be about 22,000. Right around the Mishkan. And then 74,600 plus their wives and children, that are going to be in a huge camp to the east of that, followed by Issachar, another good group of almost 55,000 men and a bunch of women and children. Then comes Zebulun, and he has 57,400. So as you're moving out from the center, you've got the better part of 200,000 men and wives and children. Let's call it, just for nice round numbers, probably close to 500,000 people just to the east of the Mishkan. Can you see why things like cleanliness and various instructions about how to keep the camp orderly are all of a sudden of dramatic import? All right, the people of Judah, they're going to be the ones that will set forth first. Because it's important, too, when you talk about logistics and you get ready to move a camp of about 3 million people, there needs to be some order to how it's going to be done, or you got a real mess on your hands. On the south side, first we have Reuben. Prince of Reuben is Elizur, son of Shedeur. And there are 46,500 of those. Then, to the south of them comes Simeon. Finally, Gad. Remember, Gad is the one that has the not odd number, but an odd 50 number. 45,650 of them to the south. And it gives the sum, okay? So in this southern area, you have a sum of those three tribes that are provided. Tent of meeting, camp of the Levites, is in the middle of the camps. And then from there, after it reminds us of that, we go to the west side. Here we have Ephraim. He is represented by the prince Elishama, son of Amihud. 40,500 of those. Next to him, this makes perfect sense, is the tribe, also another son of Joseph, of Manasseh. Gamaliel is the one who is the prince of Manasseh, and he's got 32,200 men of war, plus wives and children, that are there. And then we go to Benjamin. Abidan, son of Gideoni, is the prince, and there are 35,400 of them. Finally, it gets around to the north side. On the north side, you have Dan first. Ahiezer, son of Amishaddai. Amishaddai, my people of Yah. His host, and those that were numbered with him, 62,700. Then Asher, then Naphtali. And it gives the numbers of each of those. When it's all said and done, tells us the sum here, 157,600. They are the ones who set forth last, the hindmost. Those that were numbered, it tells us one more time, of the children of Israel, by their fathers' houses, all that were numbered of the camps, according to their host, again, 603,550. But the Levites, one more time, were not numbered, because that's not the way it was to be done. Thus, the children of Israel did, according to what Yahuwah commanded Moshe. They pitched by their banners, by their flags, their standards, and they set forward, each one according to his families and according to his father's houses. Now, chapter 3 is going to tell us a bit about the sons of Aaron, the Levites. Of the sons of Aaron, first we got their names. We remember Nadab, firstborn, then Abihu, and then Eleazar and Ithamar. These are the names, it says, twice. These are the names of the sons of Aaron. Verse 3 says the same thing. These are the names of the sons of Aaron. Priests that were anointed when he consecrated them in the priest's office to minister there. And Nadab and Abihu, we remember this, right? A sad incident, died a month before we begin this story, when they offered strange fire before Yahuwah in the wilderness of Sinai. They didn't have any children. Eleazar and Ithamar instead then took over the office of the priest in the presence of their father, Aharon. And Yahuwah speaks to Moshe, and he says the following, "Bring me the tribe of Levi, bring them near, set them before Aaron the priest, so that they may minister unto him, and they are going to keep his charge." And the charge of the whole congregation before the tent of meeting, to do the service of the Mishkan. They keep all the furniture, and they keep charge of the children of Israel to do the service of the Mishkan. You will give, it says, now this is kind of funny, right? You'll give the Levites to Aaron and his sons. They are wholly given unto him from the children of Israel. Giving the Levites. This is a theme that kind of resonates throughout this portion, and it resonates throughout the book, and it also has to do, and we're going to see the importance of this and how it all fits together in this portion as well, with this idea of the firstborn, and indeed the last, the tenth of the plagues, the death of the firstborn in Mitzrayim, the importance of the firstborn. The sages, the Midrash, will make a lot of points about the firstborn. Of course, we see that throughout Scripture, it's sometimes it's the firstborn, sometimes it's the secondborn when it's twins, and we've seen a number of cases where that's the case. Yaakov and his brother Esau, Esau I have hated, Yaakov I have loved, firstborn and secondborn, and yet their positions were essentially reversed. In Mitzrayim, it was the firstborn that would have carried on the traditions the sages have pointed out, and in fact they were pagan traditions. And so when the firstborn of Israel were killed, it literally represents kind of a disconnect of one generation in Egypt, in Mitzrayim, with the next generation. The firstborn isn't there to lead them down the same pagan ways. They've been cut off in a really real and interesting way. And in the case of what's going on here in the wilderness, we're going to see the Levites take the place of the firstborn. We saw the Levites step up after the incident with the golden calf. And that seems to be the reason why these things are going to take place. But in any case, we see that what is going to be described here is that the firstborn are being... Well, the right word is redeemed by the Levites. And the Levites, in turn, are now going to owe their fealty, their allegiance. They're going to be servants of Aaron, the high priest, who is going to essentially guide them in their appointed service to the Mishkan, to the tabernacle. Appoint Aaron and his sons, they can keep the priesthood. And the common man that draws nigh, it tells us again, is to be put to death. So behold, says Yahuwah to Moshe, I have taken the Levites from among the children of Israel instead of every firstborn that opens the womb among the children of Israel. The Levites shall be mine. Because, he tells us, and here's this connection between the firstborn and the Levites, all the firstborn, man and beast, remember, they're all mine. On the day that I smote all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, I hallowed, I set apart to me all the firstborn in Israel, both man and beast, mine. They are mine, they shall be, Ani Yahuwah. And Yahuwah spoke to Moshe in the wilderness, and he said furthermore, number, raise up the head, count the children of Levi. In this case, we just finished the census of all of the tribes, the men that could go to war. Now we're going to get a separate census of the Levites by their fathers' houses from their families. But it's no longer men able to go to war age 20 and above. Now it's a month old and upwards. You're to number them. Why a month old? Well, again, there is a lot of discussion on this score. The consensus seems to be that, of course, in a lot of cases, sadly, infants didn't survive the first month. And it was almost like when a baby died a week or two after being born, it wasn't a lot different. It was kind of sort of, if you will, as if they had been stillborn. Infant mortality. But by the time they get to be a month old, things are looking fairly good. So we're going to number those that are a month old and upward. So Moshe did so. He numbered them as he was commanded. And we're going to divide the sons of Levi into the four sons that Levi had by their tribes. Their names, Gershon, Kohath, Merari. These are the names of the sons of Gershon by their families. Okay, first we go Libni, Shammai. Sons of Kohath by their families, Amram, Izhar, Hebron, and Uziel. Sons of Merari by their families, Mahli and Mushi. These are the families of the Levites according to their houses of Gershon. Here are how many that were numbered. And we get the same kind of a repetition. Those that were numbered of them according to the number of all the males from a month old and upward, even those that were numbered of them were 7,500. Families of the Gershonites were to pitch behind the Mishkan to the west. And then it tells us what they're fixing to do, who they are going to be, what they're going to be in charge of. The charge of the sons of Gershon in the Mishkan and the tent, Ohel, and the coverings, and the screen for the door of the tent of meetings, and the hangings of the courts, and the screen for the door by the tabernacle, the cords, all of the things basically that have to do with the coverings and the hangings and the cords are to be the charge, the duty of the Gershonites. Let's go on to Kohath, family of the Amramites, and the Isharites, and the Hebronites, and the family of the Uzielites. These are the four sons of Kohath, and the number of all of their males, a month old and upward, 8,600 keepers of the charge of the sanctuary. They are to pitch on the south side of the Mishkan. Their charge, the ark, the table, the candlestick, the altars, the vessels, all these things that pertain to the sanctuary wherein the priests minister, and the screen, and all the things that go with the service there. Eleazar, son of Aaron, is the prince of the Levites. He's going to have oversight of them that keep charge of the sanctuary. Finally, on to Merari, family of the Mahlites and the Mushites, those that were numbered of Merari, according to the number of males, month old and upward, 6,200. They pitch on the north side of the tabernacle, and the appointed charge of Merari, the boards, the bars, the pillars, the sockets, the instruments, anything that pertains to, let's just call it the foundation, the setup, and the structure. Pillars of the court round about, their sockets, pins, and cords. They were to pitch on the east side before the tent of the meeting towards the sunrise. Now we're at Moshe and Aaron and his sons. They were going to pitch on the east side of the tabernacle. They keep charge of the sanctuary. All that were numbered of the Levites, Moshe and Aaron numbered them by command, month old and upward, 22,200. 22,200. Now Moshe is told the following. Number all of the firstborn males of the children of Israel from a month old and upward, and take a number of their names. Now let's pause. You notice the difference here? Before, we've had the males that were numbered of the children of Israel. These were men that could go to war. That's a smaller number, well, than the number of firstborn that are going to be numbered here. Because now we're including among the firstborn all of those males who are all the way down to a month old. It kind of makes sense because what we're going to do is we're ready to compare the number of firstborn males in this entire camp outside of the Levites to the number of firstborn, to the replacement, those who will be put instead of the firstborn, which is the Levites, the surrogates for the firstborn. And approximately, we've already seen this, there's 22,200 Levites. How many firstborn of Israel from a month old and upwards are there? Well, take the count. Instead, they're going to be used, the Levites, they're going to be put in place of, instead of, tachat, by the way, is the Hebrew word there, instead of the firstborn of the rest of Israel. Oh, and the cattle of the Levites will likewise be a substitute for the firstlings of the cattle among the children of Israel. So Moshe did. He took a count. He numbered the heads. And all the firstborn males, says verse 43, according to the number of names, month old and upward, that were numbered, 22,200, 313. First time we've seen an odd number in this whole count. Now there are 22,200 Levites, and there's 22,273. That's pretty darn close. There are 73 more firstborn than there are Levites. And the Lord spoke, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, take the Levites, kach et ha levim, tachat, instead, tachat, in place of, instead of the firstborn, among the children of Israel. Take their cattle in place of the firstborn cattle too. They'll be mine. And as for the redemption, now here comes an interesting little, tidbit here. Verse 46, the redemption of the excess. 213. Oops, I misspoke a while ago. It's 22,000 even Levites. And 22,273 of the firstborn. Still pretty close. So the delta here, the difference between the number of Levites and the number of firstborn is 273. Take 5 shekels apiece by the poll and give that money that remains, 273 times 5 shekels apiece, give that money that remains from them that are redeemed to Aaron and his sons. This is the redemption money. So Moshe took that money from them over and above that was redeemed by the Levites from the firstborn of the children of Israel. He took the money. It was 1,305 shekels. And he gave that money to Aaron and his sons, just as he had been commanded. So literally, everything is going to balance here. Now, I mentioned one other thing earlier. I just think this is kind of fascinating. I'm going to throw it out because we're going to talk in the fourth chapter. We're going to begin to go through the sons of the Levites in particular. And this will continue into the next portion next week. We'll have a little bit more about it. But we're going to see, as we begin to wrap this portion up, the service of the sons of Kohath in the tent of meeting, the things they're going to do when it comes to the most holy things. But I want to pause here again and go back to this concept of numbers, because one of the things that fascinates me, it's also one of the things that I think is kind of interesting. It's politically incorrect. And it's because people don't do the math that we don't even notice these things. I guess the standard line, right? I don't know how many times I've railed on this one. People will say, oh, we don't study that Old Testament stuff. That's all done away with anyway. Doesn't matter. Well, part of the reason we don't like the Old Testament and the Sun God Day Church, I think, is because it reveals so many of the lies we've inherited from our fathers. So many things that are just plain unpleasant to talk about. For example, nowadays in the church, the whore church of the 21st century, those things that the creator of the universe calls abomination, a lot of them are standing up and licensing. Oh, man wants to lie with a man as with a woman? Well, we'll license that. After all, we've been whoring out our ability, now by the power invested in me by the state of Massachusetts, says some high sanctimonious 501c3 preacher of another god. I now pronounce you man and bestial wife or bestial whatever. I now pronounce whatever, right? Parrot and goldfish and family. In other words, if the creator of the universe calls something an abomination, they'll license it. If he says it's okay, they won't. And they like to justify this by saying, well, the law's all done away with anyway. Witness what we've got running for president today. We don't care about any of that stuff that's written in genuine print. We license abominations. We forbid marriage, says Paul. Well, here's one of the reasons why I think numbers is kind of fascinating. Have you ever just done a little bit of simple math? You won't hear this very often, but I've mentioned it because the Bible does several times. There's 603,550 men able to go to war in this camp. Of the firstborn, let's see, the firstborn of a family, 22,273. Now, if there's 603,000 men and only 22,000 and some odd firstborn, just do a quick division. How many men is that per firstborn? The answer is just a little over 27. Say what? Now think about that. This doesn't include women that are born into families. We got families with 27 plus children, maybe plus a lot of children, for every firstborn. How many women do you know that can have 27 to 50 children on average? What does it tell you? Well, it tells you something that is politically incorrect. There were a whole lot of men in this camp that had more than one wife. Probably on the average of several, 4 or 5 or 6. Uh-oh, you can't even talk about that today. No wonder we don't want to do math. No, math reveals things that are just too unpleasant to talk about. And I bet you there weren't that many gay couples running around either. So, in other words, when you look at the numbers in Numbers, it begins to reveal, just one of many ways of saying, wow, we sure have inherited a lot of lies from our fathers. And again, no wonder they like to tell us all this stuff is done away with. No, pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. Do not look at the numbers because it'll reveal things. And I continue to suggest there's a lot more in these numbers. that we just don't know yet. By the way, one of the other things that, of course, is very important about the numbers is we're going to be able to look at the differences. In other words, we're going to see when various, let's just say, bad things happen because the tribes of Israel do something wrong and certain sons of certain, well, Levites get killed because of a rebellion. That story's coming up. We can do a count, and they will, and compare. And that'll give us a clue. When they enter the land, we'll have another count. We'll see how many of the people of the various tribes went into the land. You'll see some tribes got bigger, some tribes got smaller. Lots and lots of information contained here in the numbers. All right, let's begin to wrap it up. Let's see if there's any questions, comments. I'll keep an eye on the screen for that. But meanwhile, we're going to go at least partway into chapter 4, and we'll go through the sons of Kohath. Take the sum, it says, from that particular branch of the Levites. Now we're talking 30 years old and upward, up to 50. A different group again. 30 through 50 years old. These are essentially the working age Kohathites. The particular Levites that are going to be between the working years, 30 to 50, and what they're going to do in the tent of meeting. Well, here you go. They're going to be about the most holy things. When the camp sets forward, Aaron's going to go in with his sons. They'll take down the veil and the screen, and they cover the ark. They put on it a covering of seal skin and spread over a cloth of blue. They set the staves, and upon the table of showbread, they put a cloth of blue, and they cover the dishes and the pans and the bowls and the jars. And they spread a cloth of scarlet, and they cover with a seal skin the staves. And they cover the candlestick, the menorah, and its lamps, and its tongs and snuff dishes, all the things that go with that. And they put all these vessels within a covering of seal skin. They put it on a bar. And upon the golden altar, they spread a cloth of blue, and they cover that up with the seal skin too. And basically what they're doing is they're covering up all the most holy stuff, the furnishings within the inside of the Mishkan. They take the vessels of the ministry, they put them in a cloth of blue, put them on a bar, they take away the ashes, they spread a cloth on that and the vessels, and the fire pans, the flesh hooks, and the shovels, and they take all of this stuff, and they get them all set and ready to go. And when Aaron and his sons have made an end of covering all of these holy furnishings and the set-apart vessels, after that, well, here come the sons of Kohath. They come trotting in to carry them. They're not to touch the most holy things themselves, lest they die. But they are the, these are the beasts of burden. They are the ones who are to carry these set-apart things. The charge of Eleazar, son of Aaron, will be the oil for the light and the incense and the meal offering and the anointing oil. Now, Yahuwah speaks to Moshe and Aaron, and he says, do not cut off the tribe of the families of the Kohathites from among the Levites, but thus do to them, that they may live and not die, when they approach these set-apart things. Appoint every one his service and his burden. They're not, however, to go in and see the holy things that are being covered, lest they die. Now think about that for a second, because we're almost at the very end of the portion. In a way, this is an example, I guess you'd have to say, I like this, of the narrow path, right? Veer not to the right nor to the left. There's a wide way that leads to destruction, but a narrow path that leads to blessing. These are people, the sons of Kohath, who are in fact mightily blessed. They are going to get pretty close to things that the average person can't even get close to. They're going to camp right around the Mishkan. And yet, so near and yet so far, and yet, the things that they're literally going to spend their lives, their working lives carrying, they're not even allowed to see nor touch, lest they die. How's that for a kind of a bittersweet place of blessing and of not quite as blessed as some of them probably would want to be? I guess the key here is that the element that seems to be important in this is understand that you have a wonderful place. And that, yeah, there are some things that by virtue of your position you're not permitted to do. But concentrate instead on the glorious, the joyful, the blessed part of that. They are carrying these things that are going to be covered up before they carry them. They're not allowed to see them, because if they do, they die. And there is where the first Parsha in the book of Bamidbar, the Parsha Bamidbar, ends. Next week, we're going to talk about the other sons of the Levites and what their burdens are, and then we'll pick it up from there. Meanwhile, I guess that pretty well gives us a good introduction. I see always a lot of comments in the Mishkan, I'm sorry, in the Midrash about, sometimes the books of the Torah, they don't start, they don't end the way that we think they ought to. And I guess that's a great way to put it. I personally, as we wrap this one up, I want to make one more point about all of this, because literally what we've seen here are a whole lot of people that are out in the middle of the desert, Midbar, in the wilderness. And if you stop and consider, this is a pretty foreboding place. This is a place where if it were not for the protection and the blessing and the provision of the Creator, they'd be dead. They'd be dead in a day. Millions of them. Well, 3 or 4 days for sure. We see times where they whine about the lack of water and so forth. This is a really tough place to be cut off. So, yeah. It's both at the same time foreboding and yet also an incredible place of blessing. Because if you really want to think about where could somebody be where they get an up-close and personal look at what the provision of the Most High looks like, it's hard to think of a better place. As a matter of fact, I kind of tend to think that's why they're here. That's why they are Bamidbar in the wilderness. It is a place of silence, as many have noted. It's a place where you can stop and listen and hear the still small voice. I think it's the essence of so much of what the Torah is laying out for us. It's a place where people are taken away. They're no longer surrounded by the world. And finally, if they will listen, they can literally begin to get back to a place of communion, literally where He dwells among them. And it's a great way to think about what we can look forward to as well. Because as much as things look negative at this point, imagine a place that is more foreboding from the standpoint of being cut off and out in the wilderness truly, and yet at the same time also able to hear His voice and begin to return to Him. That is the essence of Bamidbar.